The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday! And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. So you guys have been asking me for some food stories, and on today's show, I'm going to deliver. So be sure to stick around for the end of today's episode for my opinion on Kansas City hamburgers. I'm also going to talk to you a little bit about fighting, like some unanswered questions that I have regarding UFC 300. Tom Aspinall has made a call out and more. But before we get into all that, let's begin with the top story of the day. Duplessis versus Adesanya is believed to be the unannounced main event at 305, Perth, Australia. Now, like any good rumor, where's that coming from? But it's very hard to keep a secret in our industry. Telephone, telegraph, or telefighter, the word's going to get out. This isn't a rumor coming from within camps. It's just the belief that those two, Izzy, Duplessis, are going to match up. That's not like a new phenomenon. They were matched up. They were supposed to fight. Tried to get it done for 300. Like, we know all of these things, but there is other options. They were offered that fight for 300, which at least in theory is the biggest mixed martial arts card of all time. And we, the audience, have never clearly been told who flinched. Neither guy called each other out. The promotion didn't get involved and go, I'd get this done, but he's being reluctant. It was just one of those things. And I bring that to you because while we have that rumor, we also have an announcement of Whitaker versus Chimaev. So Whitaker taking on Chimaev and us knowing that, that being set, does strengthen the belief just by process of elimination that you're going to do Duplessis versus Izzy. But it gets interesting, guys. I don't believe there's a scenario where Robert Whittaker is going to be fighting Israel Adesanya again. I just personally do not believe that. Not to mention there was things done or things that weren't done leading into their second fight. I believe is going to make people resistant to go, okay, let's get these guys together to do another night of business. And I know I'm beating around the bush on that, but just stay with me. It would be very uncommon that somebody would get three cracks, right? Without a level of controversy. There's examples that you could bring, Volk versus Holloway, but there was a level of controversy. There was a level of discussion of, hey, I'm not sure the judges saw what we saw, right? There was just enough to get that going. So without beating this too hard, I do want to illustrate that I don't believe you're going to find Whitaker versus Izzy against each other again. I couldn't imagine that on an undercard somewhere, even in the future, they get together just to hash out old times, which would mean it has to be top of the bill, main event, which means it has to be for a title. Oh, by the way, neither one of them has the title. History says, if you look at their age, that neither one of them reclaims the title. But we all understand that those are two really good talents and they've broken history before. And they could certainly do it here. And the reason I'm going down that road is I also and equally don't believe that you can beat Chimaev and not get a title shot. I don't believe that. So if Whitaker is going to go fight Chimaev and beats him, then he's going for the title. Now, that would be somewhat difficult to do when you understand that the champion, right? If Whitaker becomes the number one contender, he beats Chimaev, he's going to fight for the title. He draws into either Duplessis, where they've already fought, there was no controversy, or he draws into Izzy, where the entire premise of me speaking to you for the last 3 minutes and 39 seconds is around the fact that I don't think he's ever going to get a match with Izzy. So I just find it to be a peculiar situation. Something is going on with Chimaev. The rumors are he cannot travel to the States. That's the rumor. The only problem with me coming out and telling you guys is this rumor existed once before and we all believed it. And I personally was at the PI in Las Vegas standing face to face with Chimaev. While this was going, while all the time, I had just read that day that Chimaev has a travel ban and can't come to the States. His team never denied it. The UFC never confirmed it. I mean, it was just one of these things that was out there, so everybody believed it. There's a rule in politics. If somebody says something against you that's negative and you don't respond, it means it's true. But I was standing there with him. It's the biggest, take out my phone and put it on Instagram, the biggest hit that I have ever had on Instagram. So I'm just not comfortable having that experience, having me. I was the one that broke it. I'm the one that brought that to you guys. Went all around. It made the dirt sheets. I only share that I would feel a little bit weird telling you, yeah, this rumor of this travel ban, and I believe it. But it does appear that something is going on. And if that something is going on, and that is the reluctancy of putting him in a title shot, right? I mean, if you have a world champion in a sport as competitive as this that must be contested around the world, you've got to be able to get to the location. We can all understand that. We can all understand the importance, right, of any job, of being able to get to the job. On the other side, this rumor is not new. And the last fight that Chimaev had was said to be a number one contenders match, and Chimaev won. So it would feel as though Chimaev already qualifies for the title match. Now, this industry changes really fast, right? And I will remind you that was a co-main event spot. So Chimaev is being rewarded. He is being promoted. He will now take over a main event spot, which I believe is his first time ever. Chimaev was booked, this is off the top of my head, but he was booked for a main event opposite Nate Diaz. They ended up having the scale debacle the day before, 178 pounds gets inserted, bring Kevin Holland, but they didn't close out the night. So it is a promotion. He is going forward. And I'm bringing that to you because you still have a problem, or at least a question, like with anybody, why would he want to do it? Why is he going to fight? I mean, it's a really hard thing. You got to find a motivation, and it can be anything, and it can be anywhere. But you would have to wonder that. I mean, that's a really hard night out for both guys. So it would seem that we could speculate that at least a hint of an idea is this is where we're going to find our number one contender. But if there is a problem with giving Chimaev that opportunity because of a potential travel ban, then it wouldn't matter if he won the fight or he didn't win the fight, as far as going on and fighting for the belt would go. And then you look at Whitaker. And I can't think of a scenario where Whitaker and Izzy fight again. Top of the bill, pay-per-view, world championship. Now, I also have a really hard time imagining it's Du Plessis versus Whitaker, though that could be done. And I think that would draw, and I think you'd have a good night of business. I'm not trying to underhand or put somebody down. I'm trying to speak to my guess of the way the minds in the war room operate. And I know there is always a thirst for parity. And there's always a hunger for what's next. Passing opportunities. Many times in this sport, right, we'll see things that are equal. But if things are equal and one guy's already got the nod, it will 99.9% go to the other guy. Or if all things are equal, it will go to the younger guy. And it's just hard as I'm looking at the map, because see, I want both these fights. I don't want anything to interfere with Whitaker taking on Chimaev. That is a match that is so fascinating. I mean, I can only imagine where DraftKings is going to go with that. I'll tell you right now, they're going to favor Chimaev to start. I'm not sure you guys are going to go along with that. I'm not sure that you guys, by the time that fight comes around, aren't going to bring more money in on Whittaker. Like, that is such an awesome match. I'm quite frankly impressed that Whittaker's taking it. Chimaev, I would expect to take it. Right? That's a young guy. He's an up-and-comer, but Whittaker's already climbed that mountain. Whittaker's done everything you can do in the sport. Toughest tournament in all of sport is the Ultimate Fighter, just for example, but he won that. World Championship, but he won that. Competing at two different weight classes and making it to the top. He did that. I mean, there's nothing left new that Whittaker can do. It just impresses me. I'm impressed that he would go and take on the guy that nobody else wants to fight. But if you are fighting in a main event, and there's a rumor, this information might be out there, I didn't see it, that that's going to be on ABC. It just seems to me that that's going to be a number one contenders match. But if you're looking at what the title match is, or at least what's speculated, which is Du Plessis versus Izzy, I don't think both things can be true. I don't think it can be a number one contenders match and Izzy's fighting Du Plessis. Just by example. So what do you do? Where is Strickland, by the way? Where is Cannonier, by the way? And Sean is out there and he's active and being busy, and Jared has never quite embraced that. So it's all right. But I'm still looking at the board, and I do come back to the same final analysis, which is it appears at 185 pounds, there's not a fresh assertion. There's not new blood. And I know that that's coveted, and I know that that's wanted. I think that opens opportunities for names like, say, Bo Nickel, just by example. But it's going to be very hard for me to believe. We're going to have to see, right? Time will tell. But it's hard for me to imagine that we have a number one contenders match in Whittaker versus Chimaev. If Chimaev, in fact, is being held back because of travel, and I don't believe that Whittaker is going to fight Izzy a third time. I don't know that I believe he's going to fight Du Plessis a second time. So somewhere down the road, we can deal with it now or we can deal with it later, but we appear to have a conflict. Bo Nickel versus Khamzat Chimaev right now. Who do you got? And the way this game's usually played is you throw one out. It's just a popularity contest. So, well, but instead of doing that, let's just go one step further. Let's say we're going to bet. You're going to have to bet week's pay on this. Who do you got? And so you're kind of forced to analyze it and break it down a little bit different. I would be curious who you've got. I don't know. Ultimately, it comes down to pace. I mean, ultimately, that is the number one thing in this sport, in any form of combat. Be doing a judo match, a wrestling match, a jiu-jitsu match, doing boxing, be doing MMA. Ultimately, it comes down to, is one guy superior in pace? Can he break the other guy? Can he offer more effort and more energy in this direction than the other guy can match and swap back? I mean, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And I don't believe that you guys know enough about Bo. You'd have to take it from me. I've been watching him since he was at the cadet trials against Mark Hall when he's 15 years old. He can weaponize pace. He can hold up the entire time. He has never cracked and he has never broken. And there's not very many wrestlers ever that could say that. Even the really tough guys. They experienced it at some point along the way. Maybe that's how they learned their lesson and started training with Coach Cal in the first place. I'm just sharing with you. It didn't happen to Bo. He was able to pace himself. He's able to reset. And he can hold up. But that's the same compliment I would have to give Chimaev. And that got put to the test a couple of times. Nothing will cause an upset. And nothing will make a match unravel faster than when an athlete finds himself in a match that's harder than he thought it was going to be. We had John McEnroe before the internet. This is like 1991, 1990. John McEnroe came to Oregon, Pendleton, Oregon. And he was in town, so he plays a match. He gets challenged, he plays a match against a high school kid. The kid beat him. It was this huge news, but the internet wasn't a thing. You know, so it was like on the radio and things. And I even turned to my dad. I remember being in the truck, I heard this on the radio. I said, I'm like, did you think McEnroe let him win? My dad looked at me and he shook his head. No, a guy like that would never let somebody win. And that's the truth. McEnroe goes out, he agreed to do this thing. He found himself in a match that was harder than he thought it was going to be. I mean, I'm telling you, every single upset has that ingredient. All of them. And when Chimaev was faced with that against Gilbert Burns, he responded and held up. He did not buckle and wilt. And other matches that we've seen that start going with the momentum of that one, they do. And Chimaev then got hit with that same thing in his very last one against Kamaru Usman, who Dana White just called the greatest welterweight ever. Who at the time of the fight, Kamaru Usman, world champion, ultimate fighter champion, had a win over the sitting champion, who was Sean Strickland at the time. I mean, that's a hard night out. Can we agree that he didn't have time to prepare for his 8 days notice? Turns into a street fight. I mean, these guys, it was nasty, but Chimaev held up. And he was so tired. Remember that interview afterwards? He was leaning on the cage and his face was dripping. So, I mean, he was so tired, but there was nothing within him that was backing up. It's a very relevant thing to look at. Like, before you just go, oh, Chimaev's wrestling or Bo's wrestling, or you start asking me, like, well, what does third place in the Russian Nationals mean in the junior division versus what is three NCAA titles in America college division mean? Like, before we get into that, if you want to know how good Chimaev's wrestling is in comparison to Bo's, here's your answer. It's good enough. If you want to know how good Bo's wrestling is in comparison to it's good enough. It's likely to nullify. You're likely to not have a single takedown. It's good enough. We've had Olympic champions that struggle in MMA to get down JV guys. JV, but they had an understanding. You know, they've been wrestling a while. They had an understanding. The same as we've had blue belts go out and smash black belts and Abu Dhabi champions. Don Frye comes to mind. Some of the most vicious ground and pound I've ever seen. And Don Frye, not only not at that time, but not even to this time, has any belt in jiu-jitsu. Had never done a jiu-jitsu match. In fact, he didn't even pretend it and faint like he was doing jiu-jitsu. It was some judo, which does not work. And he would be on the, oh my goodness, Don Frye with the ground and pound. I mean, but we've seen these types of things. So, one thing that stood out for me, because it's very rare that I would look at the UFC and then second guess them. It's extremely common that I will look at them, observe, okay, here's what they did and here's why they did it. I like those things. I appreciate those things. Every now and then I will bring them to you guys. I will identify them and I'll explain them to you guys. And a lot of times I'll keep them to myself. But it is very rare, whether it's publicly or privately, that I second guess them and go, hey, you guys got that one wrong. Hey, you got to rethink this. And very, I mean, I'm telling you, like, since 1993 to now, it's rare. But I've heard promoters over the years talk about building a guy. I've heard them say that. And it's very uncommon in the UFC, but Dana has done it and he's admitted to it when he's done it. But just for example, Conor McGregor was brought up slowly. But when we look back, slowly, the fights for him to get experience and for him to get over and for you guys to be attracted to him involved Max Holloway. We just didn't know he was Max Holloway at the time. It involved Dustin Poirier. We just didn't know he was Dustin Poirier at the time, right? And so you see where this game gets a little bit more complicated. And for the majority, for every one guy that you will show me that a promoter took credit and said that he built him slow and he had a plan, I will show you 10 guys where it either got foiled or they got hurt or their contract expired. You couldn't work a deal with them by the time you had got them to where you think they need to be and you lost the fight. And I have a philosophy, you get the fight in the ring. Nothing gets in the way of that. You get the fight that you want and you get it in the ring. And we will argue and fight about everything else. Get them in the ring. Get the door shut. Rule one. Now, I'll tell you that because there have been matches over time that would never be made. There's these walls. There's these parameters. We must operate within this. I cannot make this match because, and fill in the blank, it could be a ranking, it could be, hey, this guy lost his last one, I can't put him against this guy on a 5-fight win streak. Hey, this guy's 24, this guy's 32. I mean, it could be all sorts of reasons. I see all these walls all the time where it would never even be offered. Can't happen. I can't even call and try to make the fight. This guy isn't going to want it. I know him well enough. The media isn't going to accept it. Our pay-per-view providers aren't going to run. This is not going to, stop. I can't do it. Well, and then been forced to do it. Somewhere on fight week, something happens and you got to pull a guy in. A guy that would have met all those criteria if you'd asked him at the beginning before fight camp started. All the reasons why that fight never would have been made. That phone call never would have been made, whether the media wasn't going to accept it or was it a marquee guy or the records didn't line up. Whatever it might have been gets thrown out on fight week because you end up in a jam. And a number of times when one of those fights gets made, the numbers are bigger projection-wise than the original. I could do this 20 times. I'll just do it one. Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo. I mean, that was the fight. When Chad Mendez stepped in at the last minute, it did bigger numbers than were projected. That's according to a statement made by Dana. I'm just sharing with you. So if you sit back and you go, okay, but that's the fight we all wanted to see originally. Why didn't we just do that fight? You will then oftentimes hear about some kind of barrier put up. Oh, I never got that done. That just wouldn't have worked. He wouldn't want our contract with him. I mean, there would always be an answer. And I got
to come. We have some early results of the poll.
What do we got?
40% of our community think Bo Nickel beats Chimaev.
40% believes that Bo Nickel beats Chimaev.
Our community, yes.
40-60. That does not stun me. There appears to always be a flavor for what's new. Like, there's a couple pieces of psychology, and you'll be able to relate to it, but like when you went through high school and things like this, the new guys, if you were 4 years later, you know, the new guys are always better, but you will hold a regard and a respect to the guys that came before you. It's just one of those things, and we'll always see that in sport. Like, people are having the argument, Wilt Chamberlain is better than LeBron. I mean, you got to stop with that. You're not complimenting Wilt, and you're not putting down LeBron. You're saying that the sport of basketball has not grown in 50 years. It's one of these really weird things, but believe me, those thoughts are out there. And I'm only saying because you have to take those things into consideration, right? It's just like the stock market. Like, you've got to know the psychology of the market, not just what are the goods and what is the management team. And so I'd only suggest for you, I'm not positive that that's going to hold up. I'm not positive that our community at large, when they have a little bit more time to think about it. I think that Chimaev is in a wildly interesting match coming up with Whitaker. And I don't know where that fight is going to go. I don't believe you can beat Whitaker and not be a number one contender. As a matter of fact, there has never been anybody to beat Whitaker who did not immediately become a number one contender and go and fight for the belt. I don't think you can beat Chimaev and not be viewed as the number one contender. And the reason I'm telling you that is because while that's true, I don't think either guy is going to draw into Du Plessis or Adesanya because those fights have been done. Which is where you do have a relevance to Bo Nickel. Bo's going on 300. Bo's going on 300 for a reason. Bo's going in a feature fight for a reason. And to tie that into the thought that I was making before Ryan told me the outcome of the poll, I feel as though there's times in this sport where you'll think, hey, this guy isn't going to do it. Yes, they will. You made up the idea of rankings. Bo never asked for rankings. Chimaev never asked for rankings. When Chimaev was ranked nothing, he wanted to fight for the belt. He had no ranking at all. He wanted to fight for the belt. Once upon a time, he had no ranking at all, still taking out Chimaev, and he got matched up, including signed bout agreements with the number three guy in the world, who at that time was Leon. So I'm just sharing for you. He's not going to come out now and you go, well, look, I'm ranked number such and such, and Bo's not ranked at all, and therefore I'm not going to fight. I was like, no, man, you were just wearing those same shoes. And Bo, that would never even cross his mind. As a wrestler, I will just tell you, you go and you take on anybody in the bracket, and we don't need a discussion, and we don't need to go back and forth, and I don't need to get this signed up by my managers or talk to my wife or do anything else. Bring his ass out here and put him on the line. When you have guys like this, you've got to use it, in my opinion. There is no reason where Bo with the win and Chimaev with the win don't find each other next. When do you turn to the truth over entertainment? When is it important? It's a very fine line that you know which button to press and when to press it. Let me give you three names. Okay, now these are stars. These are absolute. Stipe Miocic, Islam Makhachev, Khabib Nurmagomedov. All three of those guys at some point in their career and for a meaningful point in their career wanted to fight for a title. And for whatever reason, they couldn't get there. But they told anybody that was willing to listen that not only should they get the opportunity, they're going to win it once they get there. They're the best. All three of those guys would lay their case out as though these were closing arguments in court. And I remember when Stipe used to do it. And I remember wanting to help Stipe from whatever position of influence that I could have. I wanted to help Stipe because he was right. He was good enough. He deserved it. Oh, and by the way, definitely could win the belt if you give it to him. And don't forget, Stipe was fighting back in the Cain Velasquez days. These are the days nobody wanted to fight Cain. They would fight him, or they were willing to fight him, or you had to get a checkout, and there was like a negotiation that could be done. He was trying to fight him. He couldn't get in there, right? And that's one that we're just always going to have to wonder about. And there's a lot of math, by the way, MMA math. I don't want to get off this topic, but there's a lot of MMA math that would lead to an equation where Stipe beat Cain. Back then, though, that's very interesting. We should always have the right guy. And I remember when Stipe was laying out, because I remember looking at his case and going, all of this is true. None of that was fun for me to hear. I remember thinking that. Everything Stipe, now it was always being print. Like, oh man, everything that he said here is right. I did not enjoy that read. I would come away with that. I wasn't entertained enough. There wasn't a hype there. There wasn't a hook, which in this sport oftentimes calls for a rudeness, a child-ish type attitude in this sport. And Stipe, married man, father, man of tremendous honor, first responder, we could agree on this, right? He is a tremendous man and noble person. Was not going to stoop to some of the things that our industry called for. Khabib would fill into that same thing, not only representing his father and his nation, representing his religion, and he had a way, and he had certain things that he was not going to do, but they were part of our sport. They were part of getting headlines. And I got to insert Islam as well. I mean, what was Islam? Was 15-1? And the one, by the way, he got caught in a fight that he was winning. I mean, it was just one of these things. How many guys do I have to beat? What is it I possibly have to do? And I'm looking at the landscape, and I'm looking at Sean Strickland. And Sean Strickland, without trying to be entertaining, is. Like, he really can't miss. I cannot remember a time I've seen or had an opportunity to click on a Sean Strickland video package and passed it. Now I'll do it later. I'm scrolling down and some other headline gets my attention and it's stronger than that one. I can't think of a time I've watched Sean Strickland. I don't care if he's on his iPhone driving in his car while he's checking the rear view mirror. Throw something out on Instagram. It's good. It works. He just works. He is an entertaining guy. So when does he turn off the entertainer and when does he turn off the truth? Because Sean is appearing for right now to be erased from contendership within the middleweight division. Now, I understand only two guys could do that, right? You've got a champion, so there's just one seat left. I understand that's a highly competitive spot and there's guys with reasonable arguments, but imagine Sean's. You guys, I mean, right here, we did a poll at Bad Guy Inc., but we had 50-some thousand people in 3 hours. That is a massive poll, by the way. That is a massive community poll. It was 80-some percent when I gave you the option, would you rather see Du Plessis versus Strickland on the top of the bill at 300? So that'd be a rematch. They'd already fought. Du Plessis grabbed the belt. Or would you rather see Adesanya versus Du Plessis? Which for the 10 days that was actually a thing last summer was the hottest feud we've ever had. Melted airwaves. And I, as the author of the poll that pressed send and put it up there for the community page on YouTube to see, thought I knew the answer. I thought it was going to come back Adesanya. I thought you guys would want parity. I thought you'd want to revive that feud. That you'd want to welcome back Izzy. I had it wrong. You wanted Strickland. And I bring that to you because imagine Sean's argument. He goes, hey, I'm the number one contender. I'm the number one contender. I deserve it. Oh, by the way, I have the most important thing. I have the mandate of the masses. Here's my number. But imagine that argument. And you say, well, no, you don't deserve it. Yeah, you're very good. I don't want to upset you, Mr. Strickland, but you don't deserve that. I'm bringing in Adesanya. Adesanya's back. Sean's going to go, you sure about that? You're positive. You've thought this through and he's the guy. Yeah, I'm positive. He's the guy. Okay, great. Do you know I beat him? I didn't just beat him one time. We actually fought for 5 rounds. I beat him all 5 of those rounds. I didn't just fight him one time for 5 rounds. I fought him for 25 minutes. I won each one of those minutes. I mean, like, there's ways to break it down where if you come to the conclusion that Izzy is deserving by proxy of your own definition, a byproduct would be admitting that Strickland is deserving. Okay, great. Well, there's another side to it too, which is the duplicity. One judge thought that Strickland won. You guys thought Strickland won. I am very biased towards Strickland. I did not think he won. That's quite irrelevant. I'm offering you that because there's not really a way to look at this map where you leave him out. Okay, great. The next best thing, right? Terry Brand's 101, when you can't get what you want, get the next best thing, would be a number one contenders fight. But it would appear that Whitaker and Chimaev have captured that spot. So, where do you go with Sean? And I have a theory. I have 2 guesses. And I'm quite sure that I'm right on one of them. But guess what? One is left and one is right. One's hot, one's cold. I mean, I am light years away from each other on these 2 theories. One of my theories is that you're going to use Sean. You've already secured everything with Sean. You told him and reinforced 20 times that he's great. You love him. Get ready. Stay in shape. You're going to put him as the backup fighter. He's going to go out to Perth. He's going to be the backup guy, which is a meaningful spot. It's a great spot to be in. Everybody loved that position until Conor came out and said that it wasn't a cool thing to be a backup. I mean, like that's the only time when that hasn't been looked at as a reward and some kind of a nod, an accolade. Okay, great. That's one spot. That's one theory that I have for where they're going to put him. But the other theory is that, and you got to understand, Bo Nickel is on the main card of 300 for a reason. None of us fully know what that reason is, but we also do understand is to shine up a tremendous prospect. And at some point, like everybody, that prospect has to be given that guy with the right number next to his name. I'll give you guys a fine example. Kazmat Chimaev was not ranked, if you could believe it. He wasn't ranked, and he was the media darling like only 2 of other people in the history of our sport have ever seen, Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey. This is red hot, and we got to get him into a title fight. He's not ranked. So to solve that problem, we're going to take an unranked Kazmat Chimaev, 25 years old, and we're going to put him against number 3, Leon Edwards, and they actually signed that fight. You guys were quite upset. You wanted to see the fight, but you were quite upset because you looked at it as a slide on Leon. I'm just reminding you of this because COVID hit, canceled that fight. But that theory and that process still does hold up. Right? Understanding more recent times that Sean O'Malley is quite possibly the best guy in the world. Oh, by the way, problem. I can't even get him the fight. He's ranked number 10. I mean, I have to do something before that title opportunity. So you get him there with the former champion like Jan. He moves from 10 to 1 overnight. Boom, off he goes to Sterling. Rest is history. But these are important things to understand. So something is happening with Bo. And I don't know how many of these squash matches we can do until we finally just go, hey, God, give him the match. Like, we all see what you're trying to do, but you are the one that has decided you can't do it. Like you've got these barriers in the way, and we've had this from the beginning of time in this sport. We've had barriers that stop us from making fights, but the people that are trying to get around those barriers are the rule makers that created it in the first place. I mean, there's no fight that they can't make. But many times it's why, well, you know, I got to bring him up this way and I got to bring him up that way. And I got, what, says who? Says who? And you must understand this is the wrestler in me. But you show up, you take on anybody. It doesn't matter what you're ranked. You take on anybody. So somebody's going to have to do it. Oliveira had this done for him, right? Like the Oliveira story doesn't exist without Tony Ferguson. Oliveira never is a main eventer, never fights for a world title, never wins world titles, never is in the spot that he is right now, which appears to be one away from a title shot again. But none of that exists without Tony Ferguson. You had five stars at 155. Tony was one of them. And you had about 12 really good fighters. But the really good fighters couldn't get on the docket with the stars because they all played hide the ball with each other. Ferguson's the one that gave the opportunity to Oliveira. So somebody is going to get the call to do this for Bo. And that is one of my guesses for Strickland. And those are very opposite guesses. On one hand, he's going to be the guy used to bring up the guy that has very clearly got his push behind him, but he's not quite sure what to do with it. Versus Strickland has been assured and reaffirmed of his value, of his worth, of his ranking, of where he stands, and is going to be a backup fighter. I understand the separation, but I do maintain, I believe I'm right on one of those two speculations.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Tom Aspinall has called out Curtis Blaydes. I must tell you, that caught me out of left field. I didn't see this coming at all. Now, let's tie this in just a little bit. Dana did an interview yesterday, and Dana was talking about England. And he was talking about going back to England and how it was going to be massive. And Dana talked about, we have two British champions now, talking about Tom Aspinall, talking about Leon Edwards. Hold the thought. I mean, that's as far as this part with Dana goes, but I didn't fully know what to make of it. Just because there was an idea and a notion and a theme that the UFC hasn't been to England in a while. I don't know where they go or when they go there. Like, some people are really good at that. They could tell you, well, at UFC 152, we were at the, or at UFC 209. I mean, you understand these types of things. And my mind does not work that way. But even in light of that, I know a whole bunch of times they went to England, right off the top of my head. I fought in England. It was a meaningful amount of time ago, but I did. Portnoy went and sat front row right after he got done sponsoring Molly and Patty the Batty, and that was in England. In fact, that same night, the main event was Tom Aspinall versus Curtis Blaydes, and that was in England. I know when Edwards fought Kamar Usman for the trilogy, March of 23, it was in England. I don't know when or how often or other times they've been, but that, I mean, that was just produced for you off the top of my head, and I'm not a guy that's really all that good at producing those things. My point being, I'm sitting out here in Oregon. They don't ever come to Oregon. The last time they came to Oregon was a fight night, and it was headlined by John Dotson after his opponent failed to make weight. But, I mean, that was many, many years ago. So now we have Aspinall calling out Blaydes. And I don't know if the relevance is they're getting ready to go back to England, so we got to put some guy on top of the bill, or if these aren't tied together, but Curtis Blaydes, in his last outing in Miami, has a record set against him. Almeida took Curtis down, I believe it was 9 times in one round. If I'm wrong, it was 8 times in one round, but that was a record. Nobody had that many takedowns. And in the second round, Almeida went for that exact same takedown, pushed Curtis up against the fence, looking for that double leg. Curtis dropped an elbow on him. But somebody else had done that. I believe that was Travis Brown to Josh Barnett. But just show the effectiveness of the, in that position. Once you're pushed in that position, but now you freeze, everybody's frozen just for a moment. Boom, there's an open shot. Fine. Curtis wins. Curtis calls out Tom. Now, I got to tell you, from the X's and O's, just the pure skills, punches, kicks, wrestling, size, height, everything that you would throw, all the ingredients that you would throw into the backs, the box here. Curtis is as skilled of a heavyweight as I can think of. Curtis by X's and O's is the most difficult fight for John Jones in the heavyweight division. Curtis brings so much to the table, but he's never fully caught on with you guys. Curtis fought Tom. And don't think you need to correct me that I don't know how this whole thing went, but these accurate statements I'm about to make are very accurate for you. Curtis fought Tom. Curtis won in the first round by TKO. Curtis goes on to be a feature matchup of an undercard. Tom goes on to win a world championship at Madison Square Garden. It would make a level of sense that Curtis and Tom fight. Curtis called out Tom. I thought that Curtis did everything right. There was one glitch. When Curtis was laying out the case for himself, he was very emphatic, and he's done this before as well, but he was very emphatic to the idea that he will only fight people in front of him in the rankings. And the reason that's a problem, there is a very clear subconsciousness to the UFC. They don't get told what to do. I mean, just so you know, I've seen a lot of guys dig their feet in, whether they meant it or not, whether they were cutting a promo and their words got away from them, whether they clearly thought it through or not. I have seen people dig in, but they don't win when they do that. And I don't believe that that's some kind of a conscious thought. Don't give a guy what he asked for. I don't think it's like that. I think that it's subconscious, but there is a boss and there are not bosses. And I only bring it to you because if we were to take Curtis's statement as well as he laid it out, as good and solid of sense that Curtis made, if we accept that as an absolute, we can't just apply it to Curtis. We must also apply that to Curtis's opponent, who in this case would be Tom, but we can't do that. Tom is champion. He's number one. So if all Tom will do is fight people that are equal or in front of him, Tom's sitting there fighting nobody. Just for example, it would be impossible for Tom to then fight Curtis. That's the biggest problem with the statement. But it's the reason it got held up. Okay, guys, I'm not just banging a drum on semantics here. I'm making a very good point for you why Curtis Blaydes, who did a call out after a very impressive victory, didn't get anywhere with it. There's a problem with everything, right? When something doesn't go, you got to stand back and look and go, why did this happen? I don't believe that Curtis would be aware of that. I know he's trying to make his case. And I know time and time again, Curtis gets a phone call to do something really hard, and he always says yes. So as much as he says, I won't fight anybody behind me, if they call him and ask him to, sure he will. He's great about that. It's one of the many things that Curtis does so well, which is one of the many things that gets me so confused as to why you guys have never quite latched on to him. But here we are. And now Tom Aspinall has finally said a name, which Tom has not done. Even when Tom made his push for John Jones, it wasn't perfectly clear in any interview that he had called John out. He had said that he would like to fight him. He had said that interim champion versus undisputed champion. He said that as a match, but he didn't make it perfectly clear. I'm talking about you and me. He didn't make it perfectly clear. He has made this one very clear, and he said it's professional and that they have their reasons and that Curtis would understand what those are. I get it. I feel like we all understand it. I, too, feel that they have unfinished business. I don't know that Tom alone calling out Curtis gets it done. I don't know about that. I mean, they're going to have to look at it from all sides, including what if we end up putting the belt on Curtis? Like, all of those things have to be taken into account. And now are you starting to see the problem? Imagine Curtis is champion. This is not about he doesn't have an ability to sell. He can't draw. It's not about any of that stuff. Don't go. We have a guy. Let's say that guy is champion. Who is this guy and what does he believe? Who is he at his core? Is this a guy we could be partners with? We have a guy who has said, I will not fight anybody except for people that are in front of me. So if he becomes your champion, who can you expect him to fight? How much do you think you're going to be able to work with him? At what point does that statement, that hard and fast statement that he has made time and time again, go away? Does it go away when he has the belt? I mean, understand, John Jones in a decade has not fought anybody ranked higher than him. You understand that? You understand that Khabib in his entire title run never fought anybody that was ranked in front of him. I mean, you understand the difference? And please don't come and tell me, well, there's contenders and there's champions. I'm not against that. Believe me. I know we have to take it with a grain of salt. And I know that things change. All I'm saying is we have a guy who has made the statement time and time again enough that I'm starting to believe him. I can either believe Curtis and not give him the title shot, or I cannot believe Curtis and give him a title shot. But now I had to say that he was insincere. Do you see the problem? For Curtis to fight Tom, that would be Curtis is fighting somebody in front of him. But Tom to fight Curtis means that Tom doesn't apply the same logic, and he's the champion. So what is it that the champion doesn't know? What is it that the contender has right that the champion has wrong? Because they're not saying or doing the same thing. Nobody's getting a fight or losing a fight because of a couple of comments that they made at a press conference. I get that. But there are ideals and words do matter. And when you start to dig in, you start to really lock into a position. If you are to have the moral high ground and you're attempting to grab the people, well, then those words have to be right. The idea that I wouldn't fight anybody unless they're in front of me, but that doesn't, I don't want that to apply to my opponent. I want him to slide down the ladder instead of, right? I think you see what the problem is. Huge opportunity to be called out by Tom. First person that's been called out by Tom. I'm marrying those topics together. The interview I read yesterday about Dana going back to England and Tom's statement today. I'm the one bringing those together. But I think that there's some legs to that. But your fundamentals and your ideals can't be separated to the extent that the only thing I'm going to do as a contender is the very thing that I need my partner, who is the champion, to not do. Do you believe John Jones is the best fighter ever? You believe that? Now, really try to imagine this. Try to imagine yourself and your... Do you believe he's the best fighter ever? And I know a lot of you said yes. So the next step here is for those of you that did say yes. If you said no, you're excluded from this experiment. But can I ask you another question? If John Jones goes out into his next fight and he gets squashed, loses the match, he doesn't only lose it, he gets squashed. Is he still the greatest fighter ever? And moreover, if he's not, does the person that beat him become the greatest fighter ever? And this would only be within your own mind. Like the hypocrisy on GOAT is mind-numbingly painful. But if you say that John Jones is the best fighter ever, okay, I'm going to run through these steps again. If you say that, and then I ask you, well, what if he goes and gets squashed in his next fight? Like, are you objective enough to say that doesn't matter? Look at what he did. This is the youngest champion of all time. This is a guy that took 3 years off, moved into a weight class that he's 30 pounds under the limit, and put the top guy away in 4 minutes. I mean, like, are you able to do that? Or are you going to look at him and go, my God, the best fighter ever. I just saw him get beat. Are you kidding me? Are you going to say, well, yeah, I saw him get beat by a guy 10 years younger and 40 pounds bigger. I mean, are you going to understand? And if you don't, and if you say, no, he's no longer the best. Look, I think he's the best, but if he got squashed in the next fight, I could no longer think that. Okay, great, but do you hand the baton to the guy that squashed him? And the answer is going to be no. No. You would then default down to one of the other two, right? There's only a discussion amongst three. You're either, if you think it's John Jones and you no longer think it's John, you default to St. Pierre or you default to Khabib. But something I don't understand how you would get there. If John was to lose to Stipe, for example, wouldn't you pass that to Stipe? I mean, everything else that we do in the sport, any title that you have, when you lose, you pass it to the guy that beat you. But not that one. And that's okay. I'm just pointing out the hypocrisy for you. Because I don't love the word legacy. I don't love when guys talk about it. And I had people do it to me. And I had a hard time continuing on in the interview, or at least on that topic. Because I didn't really know what it meant. I've never fully known what it meant. I would just always have a thought. I have a sister, one sibling sister, 2 years older than me. And I can remember her coming home and telling me and making me promise before she went off to college that I would never. And it was after you graduate, you return to the football games on Friday night wearing your Letterman's jacket. But you're no longer in the school anymore and you're wearing the Letterman's jacket to a football game. And when people talk about legacy, that's what I always think about. It's how you're going to be remembered, how you're going to be talked about. You have no ability to control that. How would you ever even spend a moment thinking about it? But I can also acknowledge it's very real and it drives a lot of people. John Jones talks about it often. George St. Pierre talks about it often. I don't know that I've heard Khabib speak about it, but my point is when the three guys at the absolute top acknowledge and think about legacy, then I must be the one on third base wearing a catcher's mitt. I must be the one that's got it wrong. Now, a couple of things have happened in the last week, and a lot of guys have used legacy as a way of not doing a fight. And if you get out of a fight for any reason, that raises suspicion with me. That raises my eyebrow. You've now taken yourself out of the tough guy. You've moved yourself into another category. It's a coveted category, but you moved yourself into the category of athlete. A fighter will fight. A fighter would never ask. Somebody bumps into you around town, bumps into your girl. You don't ever ask that guy what he weighs. You don't ever tell him, oh, you know, my shoulder's a little bit sore. See me in a month. It's happening right now. And that's a mentality that you take to the cage if you're a fighter. If you're an athlete, you don't have to do those things. You can say no, and you can game plan. You can work with your nutritionist, and you can eat your spinach in the morning, and you can watch tapes at night before you go to bed. In your room of the house that you rented and brought in three training partners. I mean, it's a little kumsi kumsa, the whole thing. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm not into it. And when guys start talking about it, it bothers me because it gets them out of fights. If there's any way out of a fight, you're out of the category. But all in the last week, see, Dana White did an interview and he said that Kamaru Usman was the greatest welterweight ever. And Kamaru suffered the head kick heard around the world. And that got doubled down by going and doing the trilogy match and closing that chapter. And generally, just like the experiment that we did 5 minutes and 51 seconds ago, where you told me John Jones is the best, but then you told me in the very next sentence, if he loses his next fight, you will take best from him. Not only will you take it from him, you won't even give it to the guy that beat him. You'll give it to somebody completely different. You won't give grace to say he stayed in there. He fought to the end. He put in more fights at a later age. He challenged himself. He went to different weight classes. You won't give him that grace and go, boy, I tell you what, back when he was doing it. And so when Dana did that for Kamara and said that Kamara was the greatest welterweight ever, I appreciated it. Because that legacy, which is just how you're going to be talked about and how you're going to be remembered, Dana saw through the head kick. Dana knew the back story. He knew what was going on behind the scenes. He knew that Kamara had beaten the entire division to the point that he had lapped it, to the point that he was going to have to go and do it a third time or leave the division or pass the belt, which is what he was gracious enough to do. He stuck around and he passed the torch before he left. It's what you're supposed to do, but guys don't get credit for that. And I appreciated that Dana gave Usman the credit. Meanwhile, George St. Pierre did an interview today. And George was talking about John being the greatest. But it does make me wonder, are these guys right? When I tell you that legacy doesn't matter, when I tell you that's not the way it works, when I tell you the audience can decipher and see through, they know what they're looking at. And yes, if you do it enough and you maintain a regular schedule, just like everybody else that's hungry, just putting it on the line and going what you're doing, yeah, you're going to have that for X amount of time, but you're for sure going to drop the strap. You can drop the strap or you can walk away, but there's no in between. And I felt as though the way that George viewed it was different than the way Dana viewed it. And Dana being the ultimate decision maker, the ultimate voice, but George being the ultimate success. It was very interesting. So if we're on the topic of John Jones, for legacy, purely for legacy, nothing else, is he better to walk away? Would he be secured? Would you remember him as the GOAT? Would you remember him as the youngest ever at one division that took 3 years off, moved to another division, didn't even get hit left with the world championship? If you look at the map, he ran a guy out of the entire organization while he was at it. I mean, would you look at it like that? Or what happens if he does stick around too long? I happen to be in a locker room. It's the first UFC I ever went to. And, oh, it was such an honor. But Matt Lindland asked me to corner him against Phil Baroni. I was Matt's head corner. It's a big deal. Matt was Olympic silver medalist, man. This was my idol. Asked me to be his corner, man. It was great. It was just this great experience. But it was MGM Grand, first UFC I've ever been to. It was the same night that Randy Couture lost to Josh Barnett. And Randy's wife was in the back. She was a nurse practitioner, so you know she kind of help him and deal with some of the stuff he was going to. And he was devastated. He was a competitor like anybody. And that was one half of his check. I mean, there was a lot of things on that were just lost, just taken away. You can imagine the pain. And Randy simply said to Trish as she was tending to him, he simply said, that's bound to happen if you stay in this sport long enough. That was it. That was it. By the time he stood up, changed his clothes, and we left the MGM, that it was behind him. Just one of the reasons he was able to come back and recapture championships in the future. But I'm just sharing with you, it's a very interesting mindset. And getting in the mind of the genius, right? There's a fine line of genius and insanity. When you're dealing with a John Jones who's had successes that we couldn't even imagine, right? John Jones gave a belt back. I could not fathom giving a title back. But neither could you. There's only one person that's had the level of success that they could give one back, and it's him. So how do you second guess him? The same thing goes with St. Pierre, even if he's got a different mindset. Fine line in genius and insanity, and it's very interesting when those guys start opening up. So now I'm just asking you, nice and calmly, if you're of the mind that he is the best, if he loses his next match, do you take that statement back? We'll be right back. mean to not matter? That's a terrible thing to say. How would you like that? How would you like it if somebody told you you don't matter or your contribution doesn't matter? Is there anything that could be ruder? And I would never want to come in, and I gotta tell you, I gotta preface this because I don't mean it. I don't mean it in those words. I just don't have other words. Like, if there's something within our sport and I go, well, it doesn't matter. But I don't have other words to use. Let me personalize from my own perspective. I remember when, for the first time, a press release was put out to the media and the media picked up on it and put it out to you guys of who the announced team for a fight was going to be. I remember it mentioned my name, made me feel wonderful, but nobody saw it. Nobody credited anything to me, and nor should they. And when I say that I was announcing, but that doesn't matter. I'm not looking for a compliment. It doesn't matter. How do we get to that conclusion? Well, it's a business. That's how. We have certain numbers. We have a live gate of which will never influx by a single penny, whether I am there commenting on the fight or not. We have TV ratings, which are not going to move, whether I am participating in commenting on the fight or not. Your opinions and your enjoyment are not going to change. Just for example, I would go into the bucket of it doesn't matter. And we now, and I don't know if this is, do we got a slow media week going on, guys? I feel like we're revving up when we're getting ready for 300 and everything's going just fine. I personally came off the NCAAs last week, had a nice talk with Cormier, good guy, bad guy, over on ESPN every Monday and Thursday. Thank you for asking. I don't feel like we're down, but I did read a press release that the officials for the main and co-main event have been identified. And this was a press release. This was front page news on the dirt sheets that I click on. And I'm thinking, that is really interesting. Like, whatever person in PR had the mere thought to put that out, you would have had a room full of people going, don't waste your time. That's not going to go anywhere. Well, no, they were wrong. And the person that took the time to put it out was the one that was right because it made front page news. Did it only do that because it's a slow week? I hate to say it doesn't matter what great officials we have, what great administrators we have, but never once has a line moved when you're armed with that piece of information. And other pieces of information absolutely move a line. The weigh-in will move a line. I remember watching, it was Mike Tyson, 220 pounds in his prime, did a training camp in Hawaii. Nobody even knew where you were going to train in Hawaii, like what gym or what trainers or why you were in Hawaii. But it was a really big deal. But when he got to the scales, he weighed in heavier than he had ever weighed in. It was one day before the fight. And I mean, that line moved. People tore their tickets up, threw them up in the air like confetti. They knew he was going down. And sure enough, Iron Mike got stopped in the fourth round. So those things matter. That's my point. Who's your training camp? How's your interviews? How do you look? What happened to the press conference? What are you hearing behind the scenes? Like, that will actually move a line. It will actually matter. Who the referee is for a match has never moved a line, not one single dollar. But somebody put out a press release and it got picked up. I mean, I got to compliment that person. And I do feel as though we continually, as it relates to administrators, miss the point. Like, it's a very tough position to be on the administrative side in MMA. You will never be complimented. There's a strong possibility that you will be ignored. That whatever happens, but if you're commented on, it will be negatively. So the best that you can hope for is a draw. Then nobody even notices I was there. Nobody comments that I was there. I get my head down. I go out. I do a good job. I come back for the next one. Right? It's one of those spots. They don't do interviews. So they can never defend themselves. But it's also tough because they don't do interviews. And I'm talking about administrators, judges, referees. Because they don't defend themselves, we're also left a little bit to wonder. By example, how are these picked? I would find that very interesting, or at least to a degree. How were the referees picked? I saw who they are. Herb Dean got the honors. He's going to be doing the main event. But how did that get picked? How was that picked weeks in advance? Who was that picked by? Okay, great. The executive director at a commission hearing, and they pick. How did they pick it? Who was it down to? When Herb got the nod, who was it down to? Was it down to Herb and Mark Goddard? Was Mark not thrown in the mix at all? And it was, I mean, I'm just asking him, how do we get down to this? Did Herb ask for it? When he submits his name as an available referee that night, should they need one, does he say, and I want the main? And anybody else here that applies and says they're more suited to do the main, I want a face-off. I want to jump on a conference call and I want to tell you why I should be doing it over there. Or does it not work that way at all? If it doesn't work that way at all, I don't know why we need to establish it weeks in advance. I come from a wrestling background. I've refereed wrestling matches. I've even done championship matches. The day that I showed up and found out they didn't have enough referees, which is why I had to go into, I was there to coach. I have to now go into the refereeing side just so that the tournament could move. It was done right then. It was done in the moment. I was assigned to a mat. It was subsequent who I was going to be officiating. They then got assigned to mats at random by a bracket room. I don't know if you find that interesting or not, or if you even followed that. But what I'm sharing is I do think that would be a level of interest. How and why referees to a main event are established weeks in advance. It's not done like that in the NCAA, just for example. It's not done like that in the Olympic Games, just for example. Any sport in the Olympic Games, anyone, pick it at random. If you know that you're refereeing that sport, you will not know until then, in the moment, if you're doing the championship game. And I don't suggest for you that there's some kind of politicking behind the scenes that would be fascinating that's being kept from us. I'm just suggesting for you that I do think administrators miss that would be a bit compelling. When you say your best referees are the ones that get into the pool to be selected to do the main events in the world title fights, how are we determining who is the best referee? I think that you guys would think that was interesting. Do you make good calls more times than not? All right, great. What's your percentage? 95%? 95% of the time, this guy makes the right call. Okay, great. Says who? I just think that we would find that interesting. So as I'm reading this press release and I see that Herb Dean got the main event, I would be curious who else was on the card, who else was eligible. Are all the referees that are going to be working the card that night, were they all eligible to get the main event? And then that's where we start with the conversation, where ultimately the executive director submits the name and the commission can say up or down. Did Herb, who got the assignment, request it? And then we look at who else requested it, just like any other job interview. We go to the executive director, who then submits the name for the commission, and they can give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Like I feel that some of that would be of interest. And I know there's great politicking done. And I know if you're in that industry, you want to reach the top. And just like a fighter, the top goes to the main event. I just don't know what that order is. And I don't know who establishes it. I don't know who determines it. I feel like it's always been a little bit of a miss. And the administrations would rather be quiet, out of sight, out of mind, let the athletes go. Believe me, I do understand that. But if we're going to be doing press releases, and they're going to be getting picked up, and they're going to have photos, and you're going to have talking heads coming out and discussing the press release, I think there's a mistake made in keeping so much of it internal and private. It does seem like there could be some fascinating parts here. But the fascinating parts continually seem to be left out. I was just in Kansas City. NCAA National Wrestling Tournament's going on, and Kansas City has very good barbecue. I'm sure you're aware of that. Then you can start debating if you're a barbecue person of who has the better barbecue. You can do Kansas City, you can bring in St. Louis, you can talk about Texas barbecue, just for example. But if you are, in fact, a barbecue person, you're not going to come to the conclusion that one of those sucks. Oh, that sucks. It's not like that. They're all very good, but they are all different. And I think that it's a fun debate. I think it's fun to try them all. Now, what you might not know is hamburgers have three styles. And I fancy myself as a critic of hamburgers. I just fancy myself that way. And there are a couple of things that will drive me crazy. I mean, it will like get my blood boiling, and that's weird. I fully acknowledge that that's weird. But the reason I bring up Kansas City and I tell you about burgers is most people don't know there's three ways to do a burger. You have flame broiled. Think of Burger King. You have fried. Think of McDonald's. But there's another way to do a burger, and it's called Kansas City style. So real simple, but think of your pan that you would normally throw the burger in if you were at home and you're going to fry up for yourself. Okay. You fill that with oil. Then when you make your burger over here on the side and you smash it down, you get your burger ready, you take your spatula, you come underneath, you pick the patty up, and then it never leaves the spatula. A Kansas City style burger will not leave the spatula. It will just cook in that hot oil. Generally, this is done with a very thin patty. You pull it up once it's cooked, you put your cheese on top, and now cheese and beef, still attached to the spatula, lowers back in very briefly, melts the cheese real quick. You pull it up, you kind of move the spatula up and down a couple of times, but you'll place it straight from that onto the bun. It's not like, for example, bacon, where you take the bacon out and you put it in the paper towel and you roll it up and you get the grease off. It's not like that. You will put it right into the bun. Therefore, because of that grease, you won't use a topping like, say, mayonnaise. Now, I have always wanted to have a Kansas City burger. I've never had one. Everything that I just told you, and I've got all those ingredients at home, and I love burgers, I've never made myself one. And I've never been anywhere, including in Kansas City, where they make them. It's labor intensive. So even though you're in Kansas City, getting a Kansas City burger is kind of hard. They're either going to grill them or they're going to fry them. For the most part, that's been my experience, to great disappointment. But I do have a problem with the idea that you wouldn't have mayonnaise. Like, for me, if there's no mayonnaise, you now don't have a sandwich. A great example. You've heard of Geno's Philly cheesesteaks. And the worst place in America to get a Philly cheesesteak is in Philadelphia. It is easily the worst. One, they won't have mayonnaise. Now, that's a personal choice. You might want mayonnaise, you might not. But just so you know, they won't even have it in the kitchen. If you wanted to add lettuce and tomato to your Philly cheesesteak, they won't even have lettuce and tomato in the kitchen. It won't even exist. I only share that with you. You could go to a chain restaurant such as Jersey Mike's. You get a 57 California style, which means they're going to put lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise. Thus, in my opinion, making a sandwich. I don't think you can have a sandwich if you don't have mayonnaise. And I bring that up because I had people talking to me about how good a burger was in Kansas City. First off, they didn't even know there was three ways to do it. They didn't know that Kansas City style is the third unknown practice. Bagels are a great one, where people on the West Coast have argued and debated for decades why an East Coast bagel is better than you can do it here. And essentially, it has come down, the argument has come down to water. East Coast water. And it is not true. You ever hear those people that try to tell you eating a bowl of white rice is the same as eating a bowl of white sugar? I mean, do you ever hear just this insanity where you just, oh my God, please stop talking. And these people have like degrees in colleges in nutrition, and they're telling you this nonsense. And you just have to sit and listen to it. And I tell you that because you can have water shipped in and the bagel isn't going to taste the same. And it comes down to an labor-intensive element that they do in the East Coast. And it requires one extra step. The West Coast doesn't do it. They don't even know about it. So they're having bottles of water shipped in and wondering why people aren't lining up to have their pizza. All right. I bring you all of this because when I'm in Kansas City and I get the advice of where to go to have a burger, I will always do the same thing when I get somebody's advice. Which is, I will simply look that burger up. Go right online. And I will check one thing, which is their onion. If you use a red onion, if a red onion is standard, you're out. And these aren't Chael's rules. These are the rules. A red onion is offensive. It's like blue cheese. What's my favorite dressing? Blue cheese. But I'm well aware that it's an offensive taste that somebody's going to like or they're not. The only time a red onion should ever even be discussed is if you're doing a backdoor cookout. You might put those on a platter for somebody to choose or to pass over on their own. No restaurant should ever put a red onion. And you find out right away, is that chef and is that kitchen aware of how to do a hamburger just based on that? That and that alone. It's like going to a buffet. The staple of the buffet is the mashed potatoes with gravy. That's it. You don't have to try the entire buffet. You can go and try that. Is it appetizing looking? Is it appetizing tasting? And then go from there. If you ever want to know about a Mexican restaurant, you don't go in and try the enchilada or the taco. You try the chili relleno. That will then be a staple that will tell you everything that you need to know about that kind of a restaurant. So when I go online and I see that they have a red onion, I can't believe this. I can't believe that this is what was suggested to me. So now I keep looking, and sure enough, as I would have predicted, four toppings, you can have ketchup and mustard, or no ketchup and mustard, or extra ketchup and mustard. There's not even mayonnaise. It's not even an option. And now you know full well this person doesn't know how to make a burger. There's a top 10 list that gets put out for burgers. FYI, when I tell you these aren't just Chael's rules, these are the rules. There's a top 10 list nationwide that gets put out for hamburgers. Never on that list. Never. They've been keeping track of this for 30 years, 28 to be exact. Never has somebody with a red onion broken into the top 10. As a matter of fact, and it was a chain. I'm trying to think of who it was. It was a chain, a well-known chain. Oh, I got it right in the top of my head. It's not Five Guys. Got it right in the top of my head. They got put honorable mention. Honorable mention, they had an asterisk by it. If you got to the bottom of the article, they put by the asterisk, red onion. There was no McDonald's, there was no Burger King, there was no Sonic, there was no Five Guys. I mean, I'm talking about the big ones that you've heard of, not to mention the mom and pop shops like Stanish's, which is the absolute best burger that's ever been made. None of them on that list in 28 years have a red onion. It's a very big deal. Now, you might pass on onions completely. And you might even be a guy who goes, I prefer red onion. I'm not telling you you don't prefer a red onion. I'm telling you, if a restaurant puts a red onion forward on a burger as opposed to a white or a yellow, which should always be a Walla Walla Street, but sweet. But either way, you now know that person is not a burger guy and he doesn't know how to make a burger right. That would only be step one. You would then go to step number two, which is you would want a picture of the burger. Now, a proper burger will always be built top up, not top down. Always. So you can look at that in the picture as well, right? So you got your bottom side of the bun. Did the lettuce go there or did the patty go there? Correct answer, what it had better be, is the lettuce. You don't put lettuce and tomato and pickles on top of your beef. Beef goes on last. Beef goes on the top part of the bun. It's simple things, but it matters. As I'm looking to go to the NCAAs next year, which are in Philadelphia, this conversation is already beginning. And people are, I'm going to go there, and I'm going to go to Geno's, and I'm going to get a cheesesteak. It's like, go right ahead, but be prepared to be disappointed. The worst cheesesteak you could get. Ruth Bader Ginsburg weighed in on something similar. It was on Letterman. And Letterman asked her, is a hot dog a sandwich? And you've probably heard that like a joke going around, but she officially weighed in and the answer was yes. If a meat between, enclosed, in a two-sided case of bread is a sandwich, then hot dog by definition would be a sandwich. But if you don't have mayonnaise, I don't believe you have a sandwich. And if you have a red onion, standard on the menu, you don't have a person that knows how to make a hamburger. Alright guys, that's it. I have had it with you all. Thank you for listening. And I do want you to come back and show me some support. You know, there's a way you can do that. You can follow this show on Apple or Spotify. You can also follow my new show with DC. That stands for Daniel Cormier. He was a fighter once too. Enjoy the weekend, guys. Just make sure you're back here on Tuesday. I'm Chael Sonnen and you are welcome.